Eddie Robinson, longtime Houston Dynamo player, now in the broadcast booth for the Dynamo 11 seasons between San Jose and Houston, and now taking over the broadcast booth. Eddie, how are you?
I'm good, man. What's going on, guys?
We're good. We're good. I just got one question, Eddie. Have you gotten a porta potty? Did you get a porta potty up to the third level yet at BBVA Compass Stadium? Because small bladders can't hold it for 3 hours, and we end up peeing in Sprite cans.
I understand. Believe it or not, the game on Saturday against Kansas City, I caught a little bug early on Saturday and was vomiting a little bit, so I was quite dehydrated, but was trying to rehydrate, but couldn't hydrate too much because there's no way I could get to a bathroom.
See, the lives of color analysts, they don't realize how difficult. It's not all glory, man. It's not all glory and makeup.
There was a lot of well thought out parts to BBVA Compass, but there were quite a few that weren't all that well thought out. And that, you know, the lack of a toilet up there on the broadcast level is one of the ones that really missed me.
Well, it's actually the first time I ever actually wanted to. I preferred to be on sideline as opposed to being up in the booth, because I was like,
"Tell you what, man.
Hey, sideline, I can make it up 40, 50 steps during a break. Trying to get on that elevator, no chance.
There, you just have to worry about the heat. Down on the field,
fainting.
The slowest elevator ever put in a state-of-the-art facility. That's for sure. But think about doing games 3 times a week in August, and with an old school Glenn Davis who has to have the windows open. So you're sweating your tail off, and you want to drink water, but you know you can't. It's nuts.
It's because he doesn't wear socks. That's why that's his little trick. He just doesn't wear socks. He's incredibly good looking, and you know he's got mink fur somewhere on his body.
Yes. he's crazy. But I'll tell you what, man. He's starting to lose it a little bit. I got to teach him how to use his iPad and his iPhone at least once a week.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So give us the update, man. It was a huge win. We were kind of talking about it in the first part of the show. The fact that this team rebounds from the loss in Salt Lake, that makes 5 changes. The shape kind of looks a little bit different than what it did up at Rio Tinto Stadium. And this was no slouch. I mean, Sporting Kansas City came in fully healthy. It was the strongest possible starting 11 that they had in my eyes right now. And it seemed like it was just one-way traffic from the opening whistle for the Houston Dynamo.
Well, you know, the first 25 minutes, the Dynamo struggled. They didn't win a ball in midfield. Tyler Derrick didn't have a lot to do. They were struggling to get out of their own half. And then after that, you know, maybe 25-minute mark, they started finding Kubo Torres. Giles Barnes and Kubo Torres, Eric Torres, started combining a little bit, as they did on that first goal. But it's weird. It goes against everything that the Dynamo have kind of shown this year. Either they're really good offensively, as they were in the first 3 games, and really poor defensively, or after the first 3, up until basically Saturday night, very good defensively, but just couldn't get anything going on the offensive end. And this is the first game all season, Owen Coyle said it, both games, that they've put both of those together. There was a certain aggression that wasn't there, and a couple weeks ago, I saw a stat. Maybe it was about 10 days ago. I saw a stat. The Dynamo had the fewest yellow cards in the league. And while people are like, oh, a lot of people might say, oh, you know, that's a good thing. Well, if you think about it on a little bit deeper scale, I'm not a deep thinker, but that shows maybe a lack of hunger. And I saw some hunger from Dynamo players the other night, especially Giles Barnes. He's a guy that took over after Brad Davis went to Kansas City as the captain, as the leader, very vocal in the preseason, in the locker room, but I think struggled to be a leader by example on the field. And Johnny, you know how important that is.
Yeah.
If you want guys to respect you as a captain, you can't just run your mouth. You gotta walk the walk. Don't just talk the talk. And he did that. And this was the best the Dynamo have played all year. And you know, after the game, I look down on the field and I see Chris Kennedy, the president. I see Matt Jordan, the technical director. I see Gabriel Brenner, the owner, was in town. And you could almost see some color go back into their face, because I think these are guys that were really worried after all the offseason moves that were made and the things that were done. And this team needed this result, and they needed some momentum, and now they need to continue it, because, you know, going in the other night, they're only 5 points through 8 games. And
yeah.
I was talking to Glenn Davis the other day, and you know, thinking about, you know, how it's always been that 50-point threshold is usually what you need to get in the playoffs. Well, you think about the Western Conference this year; it's probably going to be 54 or 56.
Yeah, I agreed.
Going into Saturday night, the Dynamo, their last 28 games, would need 17 wins to get to 56. So they need some momentum, and they needed to start winning, and they got it.
You know, when Owen Coyle makes his changes to 11, Rodriguez goes to the bench, Shane Williams comes to the bench, Colin Warner goes to the bench, Miranda goes to the bench, Boney goes to the bench. Some significant names. I was joking in the last match, you know, Kubo Torres has barely been seen outside of a milk carton since Owen Coyle. And listen, I get it. You know, you get saddled with some contracts. When coaches come in, they don't necessarily believe in the guys that are getting paid credible money. And right now, both Kubo and Bees are making significant chunks of money. But what does this – I mean, I said the other day when I saw Kubo come in and play off the shoulder of Bruin and Barnes was out on the left and, you know, and Wenger was on the right, you saw these elements that kind of took you back to the first couple of games of the season where the team was scoring goals.
Yeah.
Now, being able to put that all together, offensive and defensively, is another conversation. But it seemed like the changes paid dividends. One would think after you get a result like this, don't even think about changing the starting 11.
Well, yeah, I mean, you bring up two really good points. I mean, the first one being, okay, he's making changes. And we'll go back to 2 weeks ago when the Dynamo came to Salt Lake. You look at the first goal, Jordan Allen's goal. Toniac Garcia is dribbling at the top of the box. He loses possession. A nice little pass in, a one-time finish from Jordan Allen. Oh, Owen Coyle is set. I'm going to put the best 11 on the field. We've got strength at every position. We've got depth at every position. So if you make a mistake, you don't play well, I'm going to change it. And, you know, you've heard that rhetoric from coaches from every team over the last 20 years. They don't always follow through. Owen Coyle has now followed through. And you go back to Euro's goal, the game-winning goal. Could Raul Rodriguez have maybe sprinted and tried to cut out that cross on the near post? Well, maybe Owen Coyle thought so and made that change. Lionel Miranda wasn't his normal aggressive self, I don't think. I think the changes that Owen Coyle made going into this game against Kansas City were warranted based on the play of certain individuals in that Salt Lake game. And he's standing by it. And that's one way, at least, when your team's not playing well and not winning and you're not having winning points, to keep your locker room. I mean, things can go south really quick in a professional environment if guys think they should be playing and they're not getting chances. And going, and the second thing you mentioned about rewarding players for a good performance, you know that Owen Coyle wants to put the same 11 out Wednesday night in San Jose. But he's got to think about the age of some of these guys. Think about the age of some of these players and the travel to San Jose and then having to come back home on Saturday and play another game. I think it's kind of a double-edged sword for him going into Wednesday night. I'm really interested to see what happens. Does he make a couple changes, not based on performance from this Saturday against Kansas City, but based on making sure he can put another healthy, fresh 11 on the field come Saturday? He's got a lot of decisions to make, but you know, you make two good points. You want to reward these guys for doing so well against Kansas City, but you don't want to have a bunch of tired legs coming back home Saturday when Salt Lake comes down.
That's actually okay, Eddie, if they're a little tired coming back.
Maybe if their flight gets delayed or something.
Well, I mean, you think about it. You think about for as poor as the Dynamo have been the last 2 years and not making the playoffs, BBVA Compass has still been a fortress, and it's been very difficult for teams to win. So I think Salt Lake, it's some good fortune for them to be coming. The Dynamo having three games in a week and being in San Jose midweek, I mean, it's – if you're going to win a game in Houston, this is probably one of the best situations you could be in.
And how big of it is now that we're seeing it come out publicly, but Kubo Torres getting called up by Mexico for the Toulon tournament. That's the 18th through the 29th, so now you're going to lose him. But the question is, when is he called up officially? When does he have to leave for Toulon?
Yeah, the Dynamo asked the Mexican Federation if he could stay for these three games this week.
Okay.
And I thought that was interesting. That conversation went down, I think, before Owen Coyle decided that Kubo would start against Kansas City. Now, that's from what I understand. That's not straight from Owen's mouth, but that's from what I hear. And I was laughing with Glenn, well, kind of half laughing with Glenn after the game, and said, what if Kubo has a great run of these three games, finally gets back to MLS, finally gets comfortable again, and then has to leave?
Yeah.
You know, what happens? I mean, you know, Will Bruin, you look at Will Bruin's performance when he came on against Kansas City as a sub, and that there was some renewed energy there. He was back to that Will Bruin that scored the goals, that had the assists in those first three games of the season. I think he kind of lost a little bit of fire. Owen Coyle said out of seat. But when he came back on, so now I think it might be even be a good situation that Owen can continue to kind of ruffle Will Bruin's feathers. If Kubo can have good games, then Will Bruin's going to come back in and be like, he's going to be back to his former self. But it's certainly going to be frustrating for Eric. But the one thing I can say about Kubo is throughout these last six games, with the exception of Kansas City, you can see in guys' body language and you can hear in their tone of voice frustration and, I don't want to say hopelessness, but it hasn't been a good atmosphere. But the one person who's never let his shoulders sag, who's never let the smile leave his face, is Eric Torres. And this is in a locker room that's frustrated, in a team that's frustrated when he's not playing. I have to say a lot about his attitude, his personality.
Yeah, he was pretty jovial here, Eddie, before the game a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Looking at the other side of that coin, though, you look at guys like Will Bruin and Boniek Garcia. Those guys are proud guys that have been key members of that team, and now they're kind of reduced to different roles. How are they handling it, and how does Owen keep those guys involved enough to stay satisfied?
Well, of course they're going to say the right things in the media.
Right.
You know, I'm just going to keep fighting and this and that. But being professional athletes, and any professional athlete that has any kind of extended career, is extremely competitive. Is extremely competitive. And, you know, on the inside, these guys are burning. But this is why Owen Coyle was a manager. I mean, you know, in MLS, you still kind of have to coach when you get the young guys in, but you also have to manage egos. And last year, Owen Coyle sat Will Bruin down for about five games. And when Will came back, he was excellent. We saw that now. He sat, he wasn't starting, and he came back, and he was excellent. Owen Coyle, I think, there's a message to the madness. He knows exactly what he's doing. At training, he's patting these guys on the back, yelling at them, well done in training, keeping their heads up and letting them know, hey, listen, it's just a bump in the road. The professional sports are about runs. Guys are going to go on runs. They're going to have a bad game. Keep playing well. We'll get back in the team. Don't worry about it. I mean, this is where right now is where he's got to earn his money. He's got to make changes to the team. He may have to take a guy out that's played well, put somebody else in, call him into your office, say, hey, you've done well, but I need you Saturday versus, maybe he sits Julio Anibaba and says, hey, Julio, you played well, but I'm going to bring Shannon in against San Jose because I need you fresh on Saturday because you're probably going to be going up against Joao Fato. So we need your pace and we need your speed. This is where he's going to have to earn his money. But I think Boniek Garcia and Will Bruin both know that Owen Coyle is going to stick to his word. If you're playing well, I'm going to keep you in the team. If you're not, you're going to have to sit out, but you will earn a chance, I guarantee you, to get back in there.
Hey, Eddie, you referenced runs earlier. You referenced BBVA being a little bit of a fortress. RSL has won five straight against the Dynamo. Two straight, I believe, down there in Houston after having an extended run of never having any success against you and Craig Weibel and other Dynamo legends.
I was hoping we were going to get through this without you bringing that up.
So, I mean, to what do you attribute that recent success? Obviously, Javier Morales and Burrito Martinez have been phenomenal the last couple years down there.
Those guys, I mean, They're two of the best players in this league currently, obviously. They're hobbies, these legends in Salt Lake. I mean, the guys, they're players that you don't stop. You just hope to contain, that old cliche. But when you think about the heat and humidity and how good of shape your body has to be in to play in this environment when it gets to June, July, August, I think that Salt Lake, and you look at teams like Colorado, who train at altitude, are a little bit fitter when they come down here. There's a little more oxygen in the air. They don't tire late in games as the Houston Dynamo usually expect teams to do, and where the Dynamo can just kind of wear you down. And you don't see that with Salt Lake. It's speculation by me. I'm not a scientist. I haven't done any tests on that. But, I mean, that would be probably my best guess. But, God, Salt Lake has been a solid team for quite a few years now. You look at Kirk Weibel and Jeff Cassard and what they've done with this team this year. And I mean, when Nick Raimondo makes freaking double saves like he did against Houston 2 weeks ago, it's like, just throw your hands up and you say, I, we got to do What are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, no, I feel you on that one. Eddie, I want to get your take outside of this matchup. I'm not sure if you were paying attention, but Kai Kamara, Federico Higuain, the penalty battle. You know, historically, Pipa has been taking the PKs. He's 14 for 20. Last year, Kai, just to set the table for all the listeners, the Kai was tied with Sebastian Giovinco head-to-head going into the Golden Boot race. He had zero PKs on the year. Giovinco had three. Columbus only had two last season. Higuain's the guy who's supposed to take the PKs this weekend. Kai's already got two goals. Pipa says to Ethan Finley, I want you to take it. Ethan recognizes that Kai's already got two. He says, no, I want Kai to take it. You can take it. Higuain takes the ball from Kai. Parkhurst has to come in, and then Kai lights up Pipa in the postgame. Kai, 31 goals in all competitions last year, only four assists from Pipa Higuain. One of those assists was a secondary assist when he was talking about, my number 10 doesn't play me anyways. We were talking about earlier, there's relationships that guys have inside the locker room. Guys are close on and off the field. There's other guys inside the locker room. You and I both know there's guys' personalities that come in, you just want to punch them in the nuts. You just can't stand them. You think they're horrible people. Wouldn't spend a single second outside of the locker room with them if given that opportunity. But we constantly are asking for heroes. We're asking for villains. We want to pull back the curtain. We're watching Kick TV and MLS Insider and all these personalities. And it seems as if now there's a backlash against Kai because for the first time he's uncensored, he's honest, he's open. And there's either you're either with him and you understand where he's coming from, or the takeaway is, man, this guy's selfish. He only worries about his own stat lines. As a guy who knows Kai, what's kind of the takeaway for you in this whole scenario, this big picture of what happened in Columbus the other night?
Well, for anybody out there that didn't know Brian Dunseth is half droid or half computer for spinning up all those damn stats, that was just
I talked about it earlier today.
He's been hanging out with David James.
Gotcha. There's two angles to this, Brian. Oh, the first one is the personality in the locker room. That kind of stuff that went on, things that he said in the postgame, it has to stay in the locker room. It also shows that this is not new. This is something that's been going on for a long time. So now you have to question, how is Greg Berhalter handling this?
Good shout.
I mean, when you've got two, like you said, strong personalities, two very, very valuable, very, very talented individuals with very large egos. How do you manage that? Could you have not seen this coming? I mean, there's no way that he didn't know that this was ready to erupt at some point. Something was going to happen. You know, all those stats that you pointed out, I don't think it's coincidence over that period of time. Kai's a fantastic player. But if the coach says, this is the person taking our penalty kicks, you respect your coach. If that player comes to you and says, you're on a hat trick, you take it, say fantastic. If not, you hope he scores that goal because that's what's better for your team. He's been getting crushed in the media. I don't want to crush him anymore, but there's another angle to look at this from. You can look at it from the media, from the attention, for the coverage that Major League Soccer gets in this country. I don't think there's enough of this. Maybe sounding maybe a little bit like Alexi Lalas. these things that you see go on in the NBA, in the NFL, stuff, the animosity between teammates, how are they going to perform this weekend? It provides storylines, things for the media to write about, things for the fans to talk about. And in that case, I think it's fantastic. I love it. I wish there were more of it. You look at what happened in the Pittsburgh Riverhound game with Carl Wimmett getting kicked by that tower. I mean, tell me you wouldn't have punched him in the face, Brian, if that were your teammate.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, a few years ago, you'd have just decked the guy.
Yep.
But people maybe that don't talk about soccer start talking about soccer when these controversies come up, when these things happen. And I think it's good for the game. But from a team standpoint, from a player standpoint, Greg Berhalter, he's got his hands full right now. He's got to do something about this, and he's got to do it soon because Columbus has a really good team, a really good team. And you got to wonder, with the way that Columbus finished the season last year, with the way they played the whole season, and you look at how they started this season, is this the reason? Is this the hidden reason behind their struggles early in the season? Why they're not scoring as many goals? Why it took Kai so long to find his first goal, which he did against Houston, like whipping boys. But you wonder, and if that's the case, Greg Berhalter's got to get this under control now. If that means moving one of those guys, maybe you consider it. But it's something he's got to get done, because that is, Columbus is a really good team, players 1 through 18. So he's got to do something about it.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it? I mean, back in our day, it would either be a punch-up or we'd go out and get liquored up and handle it like men, and everyone would be just fine with it. It's just a different world we live in.
Yeah, I don't even know how many fistfights I got in training sessions. But, it is a different world, but Greg Berhalter's got to do something about it if Columbus wants to make the playoffs and finish the season the way they did last year.
Eddie, thanks so much for your time, man. We'll look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Yeah, great stuff, man.
Gentlemen, it was an honor and a privilege to be on your show.